This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Latin Americans born in the baby boomer generation of the 1960s will pass into their 60s by the 2020s. Just like in the United States, that means a shifting of resources and governmental services. But for Latin Americans, particularly in Mexico and Central America, there's a unique set of challenges that could impact San Antonio and South Texas, since we are so connected to that region. This week, San Antonio will host the International Conference on Aging in the Americas that looks at the aging Latin American population and how the governments there can be preparing for the challenges. We're joined by Rogelio Sainz, the Dean of the College of Public Policy at UTSA, and also Jackie Angel, who is a professor of Public Affairs and Sociology at the LBJ School of Public Affairs at UT Austin. And welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Well, thank you.
So, Rogelio, you're a numbers guy. Tell me about the numbers. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, one of the things is that you find that with the Latino population, both in the U.S. and the Latin American population, traditionally a very youthful population, but we've seen in the last couple of decades, particularly in the last five or so years, a massive increase in the rapid increase in the elderly population. So, in California and Texas, for example, the Latino population has more than doubled during that time. Mexico has experienced that as well, and I think here in the U.S., particularly after the economic crisis, we've seen the decline in fertility among the Latino population, just like it has been taking place in Mexico over the last 20, 30 years. And so all of a sudden, then the population is getting much older, and that presents real challenges because places like Europe, that you have a very much of an aging population, that aging has taken place over 100 years or so.
Or Japan
very quickly. Yeah, that has taken place over a long period of time. But for places like China, for example, places like Mexico, that drop in fertility is taking place so very rapidly that all of a sudden in a very short period of time, you see an explosion in the older populations.
So, Jackie, this seems like a reversal of the narrative that we're accustomed to hearing about the Latin America and Mexico, how it's a young country and young population, and we need to be aware of that and a growing demographic.
Right. And actually, Mexico, of course, is experiencing sort of the dual burden of disease, because the young population clearly is at higher risk for infectious disease, but they're also, in fact, rapidly aging, as we've discussed. And so they're dealing with limited resources, as well as this longer period of frailty and infirmity, which means there's a greater need for assistance. At the same time, this declining fertility, increasing mobility among their adult children, means that they're not necessarily going to be there to provide that assistance when they need it most. And in Mexico, there is actually very few long-term care facilities, as we have here in the United States. But what's also very unique here in the United States is for our Mexican origin population, they tend not to use long-term care in nursing homes. As a matter of fact, if you look at the Census Bureau data, they have the lowest use. And so what that means is this very protracted period of limitations, functional limitations, inability to live independently, shoulders a lot of extra responsibility on the back of their family members, and many of whom are struggling themselves to make ends meet. We know that from Census Bureau data as well, that the Mexican origin population, Hispanic population in general, have a very impoverished economic and financial profile, which also limits access to adequate health insurance. And there's the whole possibility of, for example, of even trying to purchase private long-term care insurance is certainly not part of that planning process for retirement. And Medicaid, of course, is critical as a result, because the Medicaid program will pay for both long-term care as well as acute care and prescription drugs, but not everybody can participate in that program because that's for the poorest of the poor.
That's here in the United States, not in Mexico. Mexico, they have socialized medicine, but it is not a well-functioning, robust system. Many people reach out to private doctors and private hospitals mm-hmm. for their initial care. That really is for the poorest of the poor mm-hmm. in Mexico.
Right. And long-term care piece in terms of, you know, in the event that you're unable to take care of yourself, who are you going to rely on for support? Who should be doing that? In Mexico, this infrastructure does not exist. We had our installment last year in Mexico, hosted by the Mexican Institute of Aging. And we really did a thorough investigation of what those possibilities were, including the role of the third sector. Are there elder care organizations that can perhaps fill the gap in caregiving, respite care, adult day programs, meals on wheels? This is at an embryonic stage in Mexico. We're a little bit further ahead, but we still have a long way to go in terms of articulating the informal care of family with the third sector.
But isn't the culture of Mexico and Latin America is the abuelita is going to stay in the house and live with the family, and that they're going to, you don't, there's not a culture of nursing homes, and I don't think that that having one, as exporting our culture right. of nursing homes to right. Mexico would actually be a good thing.
Absolutely. But with that said, when you're living into those very golden years where you really have serious disabling illness, the capacity to care for a loved one who's having incontinence, which is the number one predictor of nursing home use in the United States, ability to have executive function. When you have a loved one who is a caregiver who cannot provide those supports, there needs to be an alternative because the families are not able to cope in this fourth age during the 80s and 90s
right,
and 100s.
And we're also seeing that the aging population of Mexico is much more debilitated by serious illness that we didn't have in previous generation, right. increased diabetes, increased heart disease, increased obesity, and also the wave of Alzheimer's that we have here in the United States is also happening in Mexico. So caring for abuelita is no longer just part of life anymore. It's much more burdensome, complicated, and needs substantial, comprehensive health care.
Right. It's complex because we know that there's a cultural preference to take care of our loved ones, both in the United States and in Mexico. But the reality is that the capacity to do so is very much limited by structural factors, the number of siblings you have, if you're working full-time, if you don't have extra resources, income, to be able to sort of fill the gap when you're having to travel.
Okay, we're going to talk more about this. We're going to continue the conversation. We're going to take a quick break. Our phone lines are open. If you want to talk about Latin America, Mexico, Central America, even here in South Texas, San Antonio, and elder care, what's happening to our older population and things we need to think about, give us a call, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this one-minute break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Mexico is the fattest country in the world. That's a grim statistic. And in some parts of Latin America, aging in the population has accelerated due to things like that, and immigration, poverty, violence, and social instability. This is putting enormous strain on the governments of Mexico and Central America, which in turn will have an impact on San Antonio and South Texas. So how will Latin America's older population, how will this challenge to governments in the 21st century? That's our conversation this half hour, and we invite you into it. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. And with me to talk about that is Rogelio Sainz, Dean of the College of Public Policy at UTSA, and Jackie Angel, a professor of public affairs and sociology at the LBJ School of Public Affairs at UT Austin. And Rogelio, we keep hearing this phrase, and it's a baffling phrase to me, rapidly aging. And what does that mean? How is it a surprise suddenly right. that we have aging people? Weren't they here before?
Right. Demographically, I think demographers and epidemiologists look at the population 65 and older, and the extent to which you have, for example, I had mentioned the doubling of the Latino population, elderly population, in a relatively short period of time. You also see as the population increases with respect to the share of elderly individuals. So, for example, in Japan, we're talking about the oldest country in the world, about 26-27% of the population is aging, but it has taken place over a very long period of time. With Mexico, as there are fewer and fewer children over the last 3 or 4 years, the share of the population that consists of individuals 65 and older has really grown at a very rapid pace. So now you're talking about in a very short period of time, Mexico is about 14% or so, 12-14% elderly. It is projected that in the next few decades, they'll have somewhere about 20-22% of the population, one out of every five.
So this is a rapid change in the trend.
Right, exactly.
Okay, and so we've seen in the past that populations will have fewer children because of economic stability and better health care. And is that what we've seen in Mexico, Jackie?
Yes. Fertility is declined actually worldwide, and we are seeing it particularly in Mexico. And at the same time, there are scarce resources, as you mentioned, in terms of the government's capacity to support and fill in the gaps for families to be able to provide the care they need for their parents who are aging. And the key here, it's a mixed blessing, because certainly those longer lives are very special. But sicker lives is not what we want to do. We want to compress morbidity and make sure that we have the highest quality of lives, and also that we can pass that on to our children as well, our adult children and grandchildren. So the government's really having to manage and struggle to figure out how they're going to finance the needs of the young, the old, and the poor. In both of our countries, we share actually a lot in common, Mexico is catching up with us in terms of our low fertility as well. We are fortunate enough to have immigration fill in with helping us in terms of our old age dependency ratio.
Immigration helping the United States, because we had an influx of younger people come into the United States, and they can basically keep the country overall young. I mean, is that right?
Exactly, yeah. So you look at the migrants when they come from Mexico and from other parts of the world. They're coming when they're in their late teens, early 20s, and so forth. So they contribute a lot to providing kinds of jobs, particularly those coming from Latin America and Mexico, that many Americans don't want to take. And we see, as the population have also gotten older in Europe, you see the immigration that has also picked up the pace there, and significant increases in immigration. And again, a younger age population that tends to also, as we've seen, create some stress in racial and ethnic tensions and so forth.
But Rogelio, let me ask you about the Mexican-American population or immigrant population from Mexico that have come up, how well do they do? What's their longevity look like compared to the rest of the country?
Yeah, this is a paradox that epidemiologists and demographers have been looking at. Very surprised. About 3-4 decades ago, there was a study that was actually conducted here in San Antonio that suggested that life expectancy for children that were being born here was much greater than even for the white population, and that continues to be the fact, despite Latinos and especially immigrants having low levels of education, little health care insurance, working in dangerous kinds of occupations. They tend to live longer than the white population, and this is a major paradox that epidemiologists have tried to unravel. One of the suggestions is that when immigrants come to the U.S., they come with a healthier diet, lifestyles, perhaps cultural aspects that protects them here to survive, and that the longer they are in the United States, they tend to lose that advantage. Perhaps the diet becomes the McDonald's fast food kind of diet, less exercise and so forth, that tends to deteriorate over time.
So how much longer do the children of Mexican immigrants live than the white population?
Well, overall, those statistics are based on looking at children with babies when they're born, and then looking at the existing death rates. So overall, a baby born today, a Latino baby would be expected to live on average about 3 more years than a white baby. But that longer life is also filled with greater levels of disability, greater levels of obesity, diabetes, dementia, and so forth, that are, as Jackie pointed out, these kinds of challenges that become those kinds of lifestyles that we don't want at that age.
And actually, we're finding that in the Hispanic Epis, our longitudinal study of older Mexican-American health that's been going on since 1992 in the southwestern United States, that in our most recent analyses, we find that about two-thirds of Latinas will be spending, who are foreign-born and Mexican origin, will be spending about two-thirds of their lives after age 65 with limited mobility. And that's quite a stunning statistic.
So limited mobility, what does that mean? It means not being able to get out of their house and walk around? Or
we actually have several different measures, but in this particular study that I'm referring to, it's actually called the POMA, the Performance-Oriented Mobility Assessment. It's an actually objective measure where the participant actually has to physically walk across the room, and we actually time that. We also look at hand grip strength as well.
So that's very limited. Because we talk a lot about now aging in place, and we want people to be able to live in their neighborhoods that they grew up in and had enjoyed adulthood in, and then be able to enjoy that and get out of their house, walk down to the street, visit with friends, have a social life. And there's a lot of challenges to that, which used to be part of life in Mexico. That was just normal, but not so much anymore.
Yeah.
Why, Jackie? What changed?
It's because of this, again, this mixed blessing of having this extended life expectancy, but what comes with it is this protracted incapacity without the supports, either assisted devices, family members to actually help someone to make those transitions, having grab bars, for example, having safe streets, and having places to sit down when you want to engage with your neighbors, which, incidentally, the role of neighbors are a very important source of support in our sort of post-traditional society when our family members are not close by. In Mexico, of course, the city, Mexico City, is changing rapidly. And the government is trying to, you know, make it age-friendly, meaning that's physically safe, because we know that falls are one of the major risks for admission into an emergency room and for suffering a skeletal illness that or injury, rather, that takes many, many, many weeks to recuperate from. And that social isolation that can result from that, By feeling that you're not able to get up and move and groove, in and of itself is an added risk factor for dependency and for extra care that's needed. So we're trying to, in this conference series, identify ways to not only postpone the onset of illness and all these disabilities, but what are the interventions that we can turn to and pinpoint that can foster healthful aging and really turn the narrative around, because we both societies tend to focus on dependency, because this is, of course, what the federal government and the national governments and regional governments are trying to grapple here and trying to estimate the potential dependency burden. But in the end, we want to really flip that narrative around to promote healthful aging, because in the end, that will, in fact, save millions of dollars.
So, Rogelio Sainz, what role can UTSA San Antonio play in fostering this dialogue. There's a lot going on in the United States that Mexico can benefit from, or Latin America can benefit from, and the other way around.
Also. Yeah, I think that the role of the university and the College of Public Policy has been very much to bring together the academicians and policymakers as well as practitioners. And that's what's going on in this conference, that we have these three sets of individuals here that typically are not in dialogue, and trying to build those bridges.
And so, Jackie, what do you hope that comes from this conference?
We're going to be having a consensus-building session. Everybody's invited to engage in that on Friday. And we want to be able to identify the highest priority areas as we move forward in our studies and investigations and dialogue and with our ninth installment, which will be held at the University of Southern California next September. And as we're all aware, tomorrow is National Hispanic Heritage Month, and Mexican Independence Day is the following. So we always host our installments during that time, because we want to recognize and embrace all of those positive aspects of the community, of our Latino community, but at the same time want to, you know, face and confront how to solve these very important and urgent problems that both countries are facing at this time.
And is Mexico very much aware that this is a challenge, and this is something that they need to come up with solutions?
You betcha. Luis Gutierrez will be, who is the director of the National Institute of Geriatrics in Mexico, will be here, as well as many of his colleagues and staff. He's very engaged in the conference series, and he is he's responsible for finding out some of the innovative solutions. And here in the United States, he's very focused, of course, on transnational families, to see how we can foster, caregiving programs to make that work even better. We have to come up with not only culturally appropriate programs, but cost-effective ones, and that's sort of probably the biggest challenge that we're faced with.
All right. Jackie Angel is a professor of public affairs and sociology at the LBJ School of Public Affairs at UT Austin. Also, Rogelio Sainz is here, dean of the College of Public Policy at UTSA. This weekend is the San Antonio host, the International Conference of Aging in the Americas. Thank you all for joining us, and The Source continues after this break.